You are listening to Mark Hatmaker Rough and Tumble Raconteur. This is a grab bag of old school Western martial arts, resurrected indigenous ways and empirical musings tinged with a heavy dose of respect, admiration, let's call it hero worship, for these hosses of yore. Hey crew, this is Mark Hatmaker coming to you from the Comancheria. Today we're going to talk about moving from the Viking tradition into the cowboy tradition and on up, and then we're going to be talking about some combat abs. That's why, because if you're into combat sports, you got to have that strong core region. Let's open up with a series of quotes where we're talking about where the value of this strong core, the strong trunk, has always been prized. And again, it goes on through the ages, but I just thought these were nice and chewy. First one comes from the Havamal, also known as the Council of Odin the One-Eyed, which for my money, I love reading me some sagas of the old Vikings, but the Havamal, if you've not read it, I highly encourage it. It's full of practical wisdom. It moves into a little bit of spellcraft towards the end, but it's short, it's brief, 40-something pages, but the pragmatics front-loaded are just quite wise. Here we go. This is from verse 20. A gluttonous man, unless he watches himself, will eat to his own detriment. Wise men will often ridicule the fool on account of his belly. Unquote. And again, this isn't me fat shaming. This is Vikings. Again, we're not talking fat shaming, because we should all be copacetic and happy with where we are and what we are. But let's be frank, a lot of us aren't, and sometimes it helps these little pushes and prods to maybe get us off our butts, and a Viking push, hell, that's a nice push, it's better than your friend saying it. Then we move over another quote. This is from the Cowboy Havamal, which I love this, probably translation even more. There's a scholar of Norse, Old Norse, in, out in Boulder, Colorado, named Jackson Crawford. He does lots of great translations, but at one point, though, because he came from a ranching tradition, he translated the entire Viking Havamal into cowboy idiom in honor of his own grandfather, who was a cowboy, a rancher. And that idiom, it really sings for me, because it also, you know, leans to my bailiwick a bit. And here's that exact same verse translated. A belly's a sure sign that a man's not in control of himself. Folks, a laugh if you're eating too much. Your stomach's not your head. You can put too much in it. Unquote. Nicely done. Again, pokes and prods to get us moving and moving and moving, right? And here we go. This one may not seem obvious that it has to do with the belly initially. This is from Ovid, from the Ars Amatoria. Quote, a white skin on a sailor is a disgrace, so into the salt water and the rays of the sun, he should be dark-skinned, unquote. As we see that, it's just talking about the skin darkening. It means the exposure, the elements. It means the proof is in the pudding. You can just say, you don't just say you're a sailor. They look to the skin. They tell, oh, okay, you're out there. You're on the water. You're in the salt spray. You're in the wind. You do this. And that's the same thing. The body, the skin, is the sign of the act. If our lips proclaim a warrior, but our body and our waistlines declare something else, right? Well, it's enough of that. It's not shaming sight. Just pause for consideration. I mean, all of us can use a little bit of, are we are where we want to be? And let's move on from there. Now, let's go on and actually start talking about some science now, some pragmatics. And when we're talking about combat ab conditioning, let's talk about the negative injunctions of things. And here we're going to spend a little bit of time on just one aspect. Then, you know, when you have six-pack abs, washboard abs, slim and trace waistlines, the colloquialisms, these reflect the aesthetic side of abdominal training. Now, old school thought, and you and me, I wager, we love the aesthetic ideal, pursuing that Greek statuary standard, but carved by present-day living flesh. I mean, who wouldn't want to look like that, right? Let's see, new school thought admires this aesthetic just as much, and perhaps too much, because we'll get to this mistaken disparity here in just a moment. See, old school thought, and we're talking about the old school physical cultures, the old school boxers, wrestlers, the combination men, they valued internal function as highly as they valued the outwardly realized aesthetic presentation. They felt correctly that the hidden guy wires, as it were, of unseen muscle, tendon, and ligament were the levers and pulleys behind this curtain of flesh that fosters the performance and shows that this what is visible to the naked eye, that's the eye candy, but really what's going on underneath was valued just as much, if not more, to old school thought. See, now here is where new school thought kind of falls down a bit. Here we have our disparity. New school thought gives primary place to this visual presentation. The internal stability is an afterthought that moves to the fore once an injury rears its head. And even then, these internal stability exercises are treated as rehab, so we can get back to the Instagram-ready show work. See, old school thought saw there's no division between the external and the internal abdominal musculature. They were both, well, all thought to be brought as close to an idealized functional perfection as could be managed. So that means not just what we can see, but what's going on underneath the skin. I mean, going deep within the abdominal core. The aesthetic exercises were also, at this time, the old school days, of the prehab to prevent injury. The aesthetic exercises were also the rehab in case of injury. So the exercises of rehab, prehab, internal structural support, and external eye candy all in one. What they never were repetitive stress movements that actually led to nagging pains and or functional rupture points in the future of the athlete. Now let us look to one key concept by which old school thought used to winnow abdominal trunk spinal support work. There's more. We're only going to be discussing one here. I mean, we go into greater detail in this in our material, Unleaded Warrior Abs. And since this is an audio presentation, I'll provide a link to a text version of this. We actually give you a diagram of the internal anatomical diagram of the psoas muscle, P-S-O-A-S. It's really important to understand how this works. So I'll describe it a bit, but if you take a look at the diagram, you see how this the muscle attaches, uniting the upper and lower body, you get an idea of where so much problems can come in. Old school thought would seek to minus out the psoas as much as possible. See, the psoas muscles are twin fusiform muscles that attach to each side of your lumbar spine, and then they twine over and through the pelvis to terminate at the top of each femur. So it's not a clear path and support. So they kind of loop around. Again, if you get one nice little visual presentation of this, you know, Google up that image, you'll see where you're going, oh, that's an interesting way to attach. The psoas is the only major muscle group that unites the upper body to the lower. Now, with that said, it acts as a great driver of unified upper and lower body movement. Its attachment point and sinuous path through the pelvis means that repetitive forces and uneducated use can lead to less than ideal pulling on the lumbar spine and turning of the femur head and the acetabulum, which is your hip socket. The unusual twining path can also lead to pelvic tilting out of idealized planes if functionally inconsistent pelvis position is the default. And what does all this mean? If you're not following along with me, I mean, do you suffer from lower back pain? Let's see, anterior pelvic tilt and interdisc compression, i.e. bulging disc, lordosis or late-onset scoliosis. You got clicking hips, dancing hips. You got clunking hip. You got hip bursitis on the outer or inner. If so, there's a wee chance that persistent use of the psoas in non-ideal fashion, that is repetitive use in injury, a.k.a. exercises that stress the psoas as opposed to where you're actually wanting to use, which is the abdomen, or sometimes you can also get these from locking the pelvis or lower back femur to acetabulum into stressed positions via poor posture. This can also cause the psoas to shorten on one side and lengthen on the other. Keep in mind, there's two of these muscles here, and this leads to preserving these disparities in other postures and movements. We kind of will hold on to these motions if we've done this unequal work. So old school thought saw the psoas the great uniter of the upper and lower body, which it was, and they also saw it as the great divider. It can divide by causing so many upstream and downstream problems, meaning often we think, oh, I've got a bad back, or my hips hurt, oh, what's this? Actually, it often can be traced down to poor use, utilization, or overuse of one particular twin fusiform muscle group. So now old school combat work sought to reduce the use and the load on the psoas and shuffle all the work to the other muscle groups grouped under the blanket term abdominals. So any abdominal slash core exercise that recruited the psoas as a major driver or even an equal driver to ancillary musculature was kicked to the curb. Why? Well, again, if we could just picture that diagram, again, I really urge you to have a look at it. Any repetitive work of these internal stays and guy wires is pulling and torquing on your spine, pelvis, and femur insertion. Abdominal recruitment is actually meager at this point. So the show muscles we're talking about not really being pulled in here. Now, this is poor bang for the idealized aesthetics buck, and it's also a recipe for injury onset. Now, Kate, you're probably at this point asking, okay, Mark, the psoas is mighty important because you said it's the only major muscle group that unites the upper and lower body. So how are you going to work this psoas muscle if you're saying old school warrior abs doesn't want you to use it? Well, it's a great question. The answer is it seems the psoas evolved to do one thing, and one thing mighty well, and that is act as a slingshot, a tension response in the gliding step that the species used to migrate across the earth. So in other words, it's the psoas is meant for aiding and abetting in our walking. It's not a running muscle. I mean, it can be, but you know, we primarily pick up and drive off of the gluteus maximus and use the hip flexors in the running. But the walking is where it's being used at this long, the slingshot glide. And often, again, see our material, Unleaded Warrior Walking, for detailed consideration of this poorly used and poorly understood muscle. Well, poorly on both counts today. Seems recent development that we've forgotten how to walk with enduring grace. I mean, if you think, oh, walking, boring, snore, please see our material on that. I mean, I guarantee you there's way more to what these old warrior hosses were doing with the walking than what we consider today. So, what abdominal exercises recruit the psoas? If we're wanting to minus this out to get away from back pain and actually recruit and do more work to get that aesthetic position here. Well, in the current incarnations, almost all abdominal exercises I can think of are now using them. Now, the old schoolers had some mighty neat tricks to minus out or turn off some of these troublesome giants. And I won't spill that here. You know, free milk won't sell those cows and all that. But with the old school wisdom, you can do the functional inside-out job, and get this, warrior abs 3 minutes a day. I ain't even kidding here. There's details. This is what's included on our Unleaded Warrior Abs program here. There's three programs designed to be performed over three consecutive training days. That's only one program per training session. So it's a 3 days on, 1 day off cycle. Repeat. That's it. An estimated 3 minutes of your training day towards deep spinal stability, pain rehabilitation, prehab, and lastly, but not least, aesthetics. There's no need to stack the programs. You don't have to add the intensity to it. Just allow your adherence to perfect form. Control of cadence is described in the material and not missing training days. This will build your deep core strength naturally. You perform no warm-up set. You jump directly to work from set one. And when combined with our other training options, warrior abs are always performed first. This acts as both your warm-up and adheres to the old school. The way they would structure such is called trunk to limbs to roots to leaves sequencing. This is a lot of wisdom behind it. Do not, so it allows you to not pre-exist, pre-exhaust what you're going to be using for some of the major motions. And also, don't jump to the next level of any of the segments to get perfection, because we do have scalable portions to get you where you want to be. We're not merely chasing aesthetics. That comes part as the functional pursuit. But most importantly, we want to develop deep-seated spinal integrity, contributing to our pain-free state and the ability to deliver punishment with power and the ability to move and torque with force and control. And I repeat, hit the exercise in the rotation order. The design has a self-bolstering intelligence to it. Skipping and shuffling to what you like or prefer will create holes in the creation of yourself. You will rest between sets. You're going to use that five-breath protocol. And what is that? This. That's one. And then you go on. You do five of those whenever there is rest. At the top end of the program, it's no rest at all. It's all performed in one single continuous set. Again, approximately 3 minutes per training day. We'll also give you a lengthy discussion, demonstration of the myriad abdominal trunk ab exercise to kick to the curb. We've already discussed to some degree one of the concepts behind it here, which is minusing out the psoas muscle. We'll also discuss what's called the 30 degrees of flexion rule, and we'll also talk about not training the external obliques, why we want to train the internal obliques instead, and why it has nothing to do with this side bending sort of thing. So it's important to understand the old school rationale for not merely excluding an exercise, but ensuring that you never do them. We want to make sure you understand the rationale and the science behind it, and that way it makes more sense that me just going, don't do that, it's not good. That's not good enough. We need to explain why. And again, the explanations can range from poor use of time, that is cost-to-benefit ratio, to, and most importantly, that it can lead to lingering, nagging injury over extended use. Again, old school efficiency, effectiveness, results in 3 minutes per day. Come on, man. Enough said on that. Again, I'll put in the show link there. If you want to take a look at the notes, take a look at the article. It's got the psoas anatomy chart in there. You can take a look, more info if you want to start getting on this 3 minute per day program. If not, thanks for listening. Hopefully that was a little bit of food for thought. And you want to use that psoas far less. Quit giving yourself some back pain. Put it to use in walking. That's what it's there for. Take care of yourself, crew. Well, if you dig what we just discussed today, I'd like to invite you to like and subscribe to the podcast. Hell, support it if you want. I'm not your dad. Do what you want. And if you're a glutton for punishment, just visit our website, extremeselfprotection.com. You'll find links to the blog, all of our products, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of more pages of like musings.